Bienvenido al Showdown Fullcast. Solamente en español. Porque los Hurricanes, los Canes, the U's back, baby. I know everyone says it because you say you're back all the time.
305, 305, 305, 305.
I thought we were starting in Spanish because Iowa and Iowa State are again unranked, meaning that El Asico has been restored.
Oh, man.
Nope. The only ass going into this is Notre Dame's, because guess what? Got punted repeatedly. They put up the Ocho. El Ocho. They put up the 8. That's an impressive way to get blown out. 3-3 sad. 0-0 is an occasion. That's a historical note, right? 7, you tried. 8, oh, you had ambitions. You thought mathematically you could come back. And that's the saddest thing. An 8 on the scoreboard. An 8's like finding a note from somebody who later died in a mine. It's like, I plan to escape. Margaret, I'll see you on Thursday.
With my newfound riches.
Exactly.
There are a few different notes you can find in that mine. Like 0 is like, I'm glad I'm down here. Fuck all y'all up there. I wish you were down here with me, you sons of bitches. The 3 is like, lived a good life. 7 is like, there are obstacles to overcome. Whatever. 8 is like, when I get out of here, can we go on a date? Check yes or no.
It's even a little crazier than that. It's like, so I think my body is now inoculated against interceptions, and they can't hurt me. So no matter how many I throw, I'll only get stronger. That's what I believe. I've been eating moss on the inside of this mine, and I think it's opening up parts of my mind that I didn't even know existed. I'm going to stay in the mine. I think that's where victory is.
I've made friends down here.
I think, and the 2 is, I'm not locked in here with the mine. The mine's locked in here with me.
Yeah. The two is the mine writing the note, being like, hey, yeah, boy, Dave sure is a dipshit. Don't know why he'd go spelunking by himself without any gear, not tell anybody where he went, and forget all his medication. But here we are. Anyway, yeah, sorry about
just in
Dave.
Case you didn't know, an iPhone 6, it's not a headlamp.
It is with enough tape.
Yeah, it is. For a while.
The thing is, he was pointing it straight at his face.
The other point is this. There's no LTE in the cave, so don't bother calling anyone Notre Dame. Because guess who took you deep and left you there? That'd be the Miami Hurricanes. Now, I was a bit shocked by this, because I didn't think Notre Dame, of all things, would look slow. But man, they look slow. And that wasn't the tack. That's not the tack in 2017, is to say Notre Dame doesn't have talent, because they do. That talent, though, it ain't as fast, especially along the offensive line. Notre Dame had a good offensive line, and when they tried to run sideways on the Canes, that didn't work. Actually, when they tried to run forward against the Canes, that didn't work. The only direction where the run game really worked was backwards. They were very successful running backwards. It was a strength. I got to say that. Even in a loss, you got to find a silver lining. Silver lining here, the backwards run game is very strong for Notre Dame.
It's equally odd seeing Miami's running game be so damn good without their starter. You know, this is not the running back committee that you expected to see for the Hurricanes. And they just had no problem. They just were like, okay, here you go. 12 yards here, 18 yards. Yep. 40 yards here. Yep. Cool. All right. We'll throw it around a little, not more than we have to. You'll throw it around a little more than that, and you'll be bad at it. And then we'll all go home.
Yeah, this is mostly a matter of 4 turnovers, because I know everyone will look at the score and go, whew, man, that's a complete domination. It's not too different than what Miami's been doing all year long. It's just that Notre Dame was particularly generous, because Miami's been getting turnovers all year long. I mean, have you seen, in case they haven't mentioned it, they have a chain for those kind of things?
Yeah, they do. I mean, at this point, I do think they are going to run into a problem where possession of the chain is going to start getting fought over. I think they need multiple turnover chains is what I'm saying. And you can maybe add more Bengals to your particular chain.
Are you saying that they need like a precious
two
moment?
Two chains!
I was going
to
go
I think they need to
moments.
Adopt the NCAA. They need to adopt the NCAA catch rule. You know, tie goes to, you know, you need to really, really stipulate out the rules here. I know rules aren't your forte, Miami, and that's why we love you, but I think you're going to want to establish some paperwork here as to exactly who gets custody of the chain.
Well, hold on. The NCAA has already said you can give rings to your team. And it doesn't have to be, oh, we won the conference, or, oh, like, Tennessee gave the team rings for winning, like, a bowl game not too long ago. So, like, you can get away with this. I would argue a necklace is nothing but a particularly large floppy ring, right?
I think so. It's a ring that's
fucking brilliant.
It's a ring that's lost integrity.
No, it's a ring that is adaptable, okay?
Could you just say it is a ring for a very, very large person?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's
this
fucking
is, this,
brilliant, though.
This is a ring for Vince Wilfork. I'm surprised we're starting with this game, though.
Why? Was there another big game that had a disastrous, embarrassing result for a program that is near and dear to this podcast?
Yeah, I mean, Friday night, Stanford beat Washington. Stanford did beat Washington. This may be the last time we talk about the Pac-12 on the Shutdown Fullcast for the rest of the season, barring Apple Cup, because Apple Cup is interesting and a little bit fighty. And maybe the UCLA job. Maybe we'll throw that in the ring. But other than that, I don't think we're going to talk about you, Pac-12. And that's probably fine. I made you a generous offer on Twitter, $7,800 for SB Nation to air all of your games next season. And you know what you did? You didn't even fucking respond. You'd think I would get the courtesy of at least a counter offer. We want $12,000. You know what? I would have done it, but now I won't. Dipshits.
Hey, I'll kick in on that if you want.
We're negotiating.
More than, like,
what are you
one
doing?
Pac-12 game per week. They can't hear this. Listen, this is the Pac-12 network of podcasts. No one can hear it.
That's true. It comes out at extremely irregular hours. People are insanely unhappy with the quality of it. Nobody's quite sure why the three of us are on it, and San Diego State could probably beat all of us. Yeah, no, checks all the boxes. I assumed Spencer was going to talk about the other team that scored 40 points. Oh, wait, he's here now.
I'm back.
Okay, that was fun.
Hopefully this will work.
Yeah, we had a little conversation with that. It's fine.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Or did it already? No, it's still just, dear God, this is fucking awful.
It is pretty crackly. We're leaving all this in, right?
Yeah.
It's absolutely fucking terrible.
This is why I like when people tweet me. They're like, "Puh, you edit the full cast? Puh."
Oh, you know what? I think it'd be perfectly acceptable to assault those people on the street. Like, seriously, what I'm going to do, I don't know what the fuck is up here, okay? I'm going to restart everything, because this is possessed.
Damn, he's going to burn his house down.
Whoa, wait. Marianne, we're getting a divorce. Why? Because Skype isn't working. We're going to get remarried.
We'll get remarried tomorrow. Don't worry about
okay? Can you just be cool? I'm trying to podcast.
Jim Bankoff, I need you to fire me.
It's the business of the future. Georgia Tech, take my degree away.
I hereby relinquish all my degrees. City of Tampa, all those arrest records, throw them out.
It's the only way to get the virus out of the system.
I promise I'll recommit the crime so we can get the paperwork straight.
Okay, we're going to fix it. I'm going to relive my life exactly how I did, which is the saddest part. Every mistake remade!
This is like a movie somebody made in 1997, I'm certain of it.
Well, what we're describing is Groundhog Day, but you choose to make this happen.
It's like a Groundhog Day knockoff that totally came out in like 1997, where like a man decides, it's probably Jim Carrey or Adam Sandler, decides that like, this one thing I fucked up, I'm actually a bad dad. I gotta go back and relive my entire life and change one detail. But then he realizes, no, it was perfect the way it was because I have this child.
My son was meant to hate me. It will make him stronger.
My horrible son is perfect the way he was.
Tad, I'm sorry I tried to make you love me.
It'd have a very 90s movie name. Oh, my beautiful boy Butt Burger loves me again. Because I accepted him for who he is. In the end, he was me.
And then you're like, huh, Harry Connick Jr. is like a supporting actor in this. Why? Why did he do that? He's
and
good.
Then the Offspring play.
They're also in the movie, though. I have to go back to the Offspring concert where it all went wrong.
Also, a Method Man is your supporting actor. This movie sounded pretty good.
Method Man plays a family court judge. Huh. Interesting. Who's high all the time? Who's high all the time? Well,
he's high cop in the credits. Method Man, high cop.
They called him Terrence. They had like he was in the movie a lot. I don't know why he's listed as high cop.
And then the spinoff a year later, high cop.
Okay, is that better?
It's different.
Wow,
we're leaving everything we just had in. Don't worry.
Of course,
louder. That's for sure.
It's
we're still rolling, right?
Yeah. Never stop.
I don't want to forget about these good ideas.
No, this podcast is a Kansas State drive. It keeps going, and the goal is to be long, not necessarily good, not necessarily ending anything. It's just a chew fucking clock.
I think that's a good segue, if you want it.
Okay. Yeah. Go ahead.
That's exactly what Mississippi State tried to do to Alabama.
Oh wow. God, man.
They did, though. I'm not making anything up.
I know. I'm just so annoyed with Mississippi State because they had two fourth downs, a fourth and one that they could have gone to after a made field goal had a penalty on it that they could have taken the ball again and tried to get a first down, which, mm-hmm. like, all told, I can kind of say, like, yeah, fine. They wanted to get – that got them to 7 points that they felt like they had – it would have been a bad momentum shift if they had – gotten knocked off the field on fourth down, whatever. But then they had this fourth and three on, I believe, the other side of the 50 late in the game. And they're just like, well, we'll punt it away. And immediately, like, Bama, with no trouble at all, just marches down the field on them. It was the most frustrating thing I've ever seen. It just, and Spencer, you were absolutely right. When you said that when you play Alabama, you have to play like you're the underdog and behind the whole time.
The entire time.
You can't ever start being like, well, let's just ease off that. No, keep the gas pedal to the fucking floor.
The entire time. And it's weird because you say put the pedal down to the floor the entire time. And that's correct. But also a strange phrase because the other way to beat them is to play like an underdog and play really really slow, which is kind of, it's weird when you think about teams that have gone head to head with them. A lot of times they're teams that have played as quickly as possible, right?
Right.
Like Ole Miss with under Hugh Freeze, or you know, the Sumlin Manziel team that managed to beat them in Tuscaloosa, or when you think about Clemson and the way Deshaun Watson, you know, played at stretches against them for the Tigers in the championship game. And even in the game that Clemson lost the year before, right? Like, this was actually like kind of an innovative approach for not just any team, but like a division team facing them, right? And they came real close to pulling it off. And when it came time to continue that, and to play like the entire manual of underdog football to the hilt, they flinched and they punted and they didn't take the chance to get the ball back and keep eating clock and to keep that offense off the field. Because here's the other thing. What have we talked about when it comes to college football and emotions, that there's only one man who really has them, and it's Todd Grantham, the defensive coordinator for Mississippi State. He's the only person with emotions. They're very, very big emotions. You know how men are.
I didn't know blitz was an emotion, but okay.
Blitzing is
good morning, Todd. How are you feeling? Blitz.
Blitzing is what you do.
That's pretty accurate, though.
It's how men show emotions, okay? You know, men, they're unstable. You know, they just get so emotional about everything. And Todd Grantham, he's a man with a lot of feelings, all right?
God, and you know how he expresses those feelings? He would be an amazing president. He would be just day three. My bowels are all backed up. Launch all the nukes! Launch all of them!
This is the most damning thing, okay? Because it's
Delaware!
It's bad enough.
Do you mean Denmark? I mean both!
When you get into the situation where there is was it third and 13?
It was third and 15. There were 31 seconds left in the game, and Alabama had the ball at its own 43. So they were not in position to kick a field goal to win the game. And they obviously had a long way to go to either get into that position or keep the drive going.
Mm-hmm. Alabama lines up. They're probably going to pass to Calvin Ridley. Now, this is just a guess because this play never happened, okay? But Calvin Ridley pretty much bailed out Alabama on any third and long or second and long situation that they were facing, right?
Well, it's also a good guess because they completed 10 passes and 5 of them went to Calvin Ridley.
Correct. Pretty much their best offensive tool in the passing game is Calvin Ridley. The ball's going to him. Mississippi State lines up. They're showing blitz. All right? They're going to bring heat. And guess who calls the timeout? Mississippi State. So they go to the sideline. Alabama sees that they're bringing pressure. Listener, what's Alabama going to do? They're probably going to throw a slant. This ain't hard. They're going to throw a hot route to Calvin Ridley if they see pressure. So naturally, as a defensive coordinator, if you were not emotional, you might back off, lie about the blitz, show pressure, and then fall into coverage. You might do that. And they come back out of a timeout, and they run the same blitz they were showing. You think Alabama noticed that? Yeah, 31 yards later, and effectively ending the game and setting up Alabama for the
win. I like that Todd Grantham, his approach, he does that thing where you tell like an angry person or an angry child, like, okay, you're feeling very upset right now. I want you to take some deep breaths and count to 10. And he did that. That's what that timeout was. And he was still mad. He was still mad and just wanted to blitz it out.
This is still proof of my theory that if you give Dan Mullen 20 years, he will make Mississippi State the best football team in the SEC West. It's going to take him 20 years. That's how, and you know what? That's probably about 5 years ahead of schedule, given the rest of Mississippi State's history. So he's doing real well. But gradually, eventually, everyone will lose to Mississippi State. Dan Mullen just has to get around to it.
We are on year 9. So you're saying we're not even halfway there.
Yeah. Okay. It's a process. It's going to take years. Years. Came within one score of getting Alabama now. Another 4 years, it's going to be a 1-point loss.
Okay. It's a responsible mortgage. That's what this is.
A coach, a mortgage, Dan Mullen. The world's most unpalindrome palindrome.
We're still not talking about the game I assume we're going to talk about. Do we have some sort of pact where we're not going to talk about the fact that Georgia got obliterated on national television by one of its most hated rivals, who like looked smarter than it, even though the whole thing is that Georgia's supposed to be a smarter place than Auburn? Are we not going to talk? If we're not going to talk about it, just let me know. Just let me know that we're not going to talk about it.
Is Georgia supposed to be a smarter place than Auburn?
I mean, if you ask any Georgia fan, yeah.
Well, like, why would they have an opinion on that, though? That's some big tension right there. I've never heard it. Is there degree smac talk within the SEC?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely, yeah.
Absolutely. Mm. There's pretty much Vanderbilt going, we're not in the SEC. No.
And everybody else going, we agree.
Yeah.
That is some Big Ten shit. I do enjoy that there's really very little difference between an Auburn fan and a UGA fan. Maybe Auburn fans have this. They do somewhat buy into the notion that Auburn is a family, which I agree. But what would be more family-ish than to be Georgia, show up for a weekend barbecue, and end up in a surprise brawl with someone you haven't seen in a while? To get blindsided at the barbecue.
Here's the thing. It's not a surprise. This happened. You know that this fight is coming, okay? You remember what Gus did two Thanksgivings ago. God damn it.
Yeah, but you know, you've been working out, man. You didn't think it'd go like this. Things have been going real well.
I like the idea of Georgia rolling up like, we're going to show off our cool new trick. You know, we got this cool stunt we do. It's called rushing for 200 yards. We're gonna really impress those Auburn folks this time, the Auburns. And then they just shut you down and humiliate you in front of the whole, you know, front of the whole potluck. Damn.
He pulled up in his new, well, actually new to him. It's probably used Lexus, right? It's a Georgia thing, right? So pulls up in his big new truck.
Hey, that's just good value, all right?
Yeah, it's an F-350, that's for sure.
Exactly. Does he need it? No. But that F-350, it's gotten hundreds of rushing yards this year. You pull up in the new F-350, the minute you pull up, guess what Gus thought? I'm going to beat your ass. That's weird. You still driving the same single wing truck, Gus?
Yeah.
I don't know. This F-350, man, it's been pulling everything.
Oh, and then he had to tow your ass out of the mud. Oh, that's embarrassing.
What is that? Was that an automatic? Yeah. You know I don't drive stick. I got these velvety hands. I'm not ruining my short game hands. You kidding me? Who?
Just sitting there flipping the Bubba burgers on the grill thinking, I'm going to whip his ass in front of everybody. That's what happened.
After the game, B filmed saying, boy, we whipped the dog crap out of them, didn't we?
Because that's what Gus Malzahn did. Like, almost into the mic. If you listen to it, it almost sounds fake. But it's obviously Gus Malzahn. He's just real close, as if he leaned into the mic like, don't pick this up. We beat the dog crap out of them.
Just a secret between you and me, America. It's like Bernie Mac addressing America.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. America, we got problems. I can't block. I can't run block. I can't pass block. My beautiful freshman quarterback, they left him out there.
I think my favorite thing from this game was everyone knew the blueprint to shutting down Georgia. Like, fucking Florida figured it out. They couldn't do it.
No.
But they broadcast before the game that they knew what it was, which was make Jake Fromm win the game. Not make him complete a slant. Make him win the game. South Carolina openly talked about it, too. They just couldn't do it. Auburn didn't say all that stuff, but they did it. Like, it was the thing to pay attention to when Georgia had the ball was, they're going to try and run. It ain't going to work. Next drive, same thing. Next drive, third and long. Next drive, third and long. And Fromm, he played pretty well considering no run game, pass rush in his face all day long, lots and lots and lots of third and longs. I thought he played very well for a freshman on the road.
I thought so too. He took a beating too. He took like that kind of beating where he posted a Bible verse on Twitter afterwards. That's when I know that the Auburn defense got to you, is when you're like, I guess the Lord has a plan. Pass me that ice pack.
Been touched from above.
Yeah. when you get beat so bad, you got to lean on faith. Now, I'm not mocking Jake Fromm's faith. I'm just saying he had to invoke it. Okay.
Yeah, we've all been there.
You don't do that when you win by 10. You know, you're like, hey, thanks, God.
I do sincerely want to know if you go to a Georgia church and your pastor or priest use Georgia as the point of reference in the sermon on Sunday, please let me know. I really want to hear about that.
Oh, yes, 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 yes.
Because I'm so certain it happened. So certain. Well, the Lord gives us gifts. So many gifts. But if we squander those gifts, if we don't properly manage them, and if we constantly put ourselves in bad third down situations in life, we can't ask the Lord to bail us out. With a penalty flag.
Did the Lord find you wide open? And did you drop it as Georgia did twice on Saturday? Which, even if those had been turned into touchdowns, we still would have lost because that's how big the differential. But let's ignore all that. My point is just catch your blessings because then the loss will look more respectable.
You know, tell you what, Auburn and Auburn's defensive line. They did some horrendous things to that offensive line. That's not a bad offensive line at all. Not at all. And they got thrown around big time. Also, I know things are going well for Auburn because all the following things happened. They got Kerryon Johnson, who better be a good running back. His name is Kerryon. And he got 32 carries. And he's the kind of running back who, when he gets 32 carries, looks like 33 is going to be easy. 34 might be easier. And if Gus Malzahn has that, well, he hasn't had that since Trey Mason, right? And that year went pretty well for him. If they have a running back who can do that and get and carry and get that kind of like mileage without any serious fatigue in a game and in fact get stronger. Oh, and also carry the ball because a big play towards the end of the game was a throwback screen that Johnson just carries happily like, oh, I can do that too. I'm one of those few college running backs who can actually catch the ball and run with it like a receiver. That's not anything you want Gus Malzahn and the Auburn offensive staff to have, right? Especially with the quarterback who, oh yeah, can get him the ball with accuracy and touch on those. It's not anything you want to deal with.
The shit just looks so damn replicable from start to finish that, like, okay, if Auburn gets past Bama, which Bama is Georgia with more options on offense, we can say, but also with, at this point, maybe less depth on defense. You know, in the Iron Bowl, if Kerryon's up to 30 carries, we might be down to Bama's fourth string linebackers with their injury issues. So Auburn can beat Bama.
Oh, man, the Sandman coming out hot.
Well, I mean, I did. I was the one on this program last week who predicted Auburn would
win.
That's true. Check the resume.
You did.
That's true.
And also in the bowl projections post this morning, I have Auburn in the playoff, by the way. I was working my way toward that, but I mean, if Auburn gets Georgia again, what would be different? Like, this wasn't the kind of game where it was like, oh, there's this kick return, there's this interception, there's this, that, and the other. It was like, Auburn is good at making you not do the things you're good at. Like, Auburn is designed to be this Georgia team. What can you do about that?
Yeah, they did do a lot of schematic things that seemed very new for at least this year's Auburn team. A lot of like combo routes and things where Stidham would intentionally move the linebackers or the safeties with his eyes to open up huge gaps later for somebody in the middle of the field. Like there are some things that I think you can maybe, if you're Georgia and you do end up playing Auburn again in the championship game, you can look at tape and say, okay, these are the ways in which they made us look stupid. I don't know that you can necessarily avoid them, but you can be aware of them. Georgia's defense, though, I mean, at first they were holding Auburn to field goals, and you kind of got the sense of like, well, maybe Auburn is sort of unloading everything early, but they're not finishing in the end zone, and that's going to come back to bite them. But they still had more. And that was the real problem, was that the defense could at no meaningful point could the Bulldog defense get them off the field. And I don't know if they can fix that.
Yeah, there's a thing here that, you know, you look at a score like this and you go, well, maybe this was just a matter of some big plays. No, man. No, there were so many like, oh, look, it's Kerryon Johnson picking up a second one. They got 25 first downs.
They got two sacks in this game. This is the same team that, what, gave up 10 sacks to Clemson? I'm not saying you got to get to 10, but Lord.
I think my favorite Auburn drive in this whole game was, actually, it was technically a Georgia drive, but my favorite Auburn feat was they forced two Georgia three and outs on one drive. They forced one penalty, forced another punt. It was just, you are hopeless, Georgia. Hopeless.
That dropped. Deep ball, wide open, in like the second quarter or something. That was the one time I was like, okay, that might be the sign that the football gods have said, fuck you, Georgia, today.
This is over. There's another thing, too. From didn't throw a pick. You would think, like, oh, man, freshman QB just went all over the place, right? Threw, like, three picks. I don't know. Maybe, like, Notre Dame against Miami, you know, having a guy throw two picks and having another quarterback throw a pick six. Nope. From played clean. It's worse when you see that because you go, oh, the other team just blew you off the ball the entire game.
Yeah, he didn't throw any picks because they weren't on the field. They were just
Georgia actually didn't have the ball.
That sounds shitty, but other than the touchdown to open the game, they go 5 plays, 3 yards, 3 plays, 7 yards, 3 plays -11 yards, 3 plays, 8 yards, 6 plays, 27 yards. That still ended in a punt. I think that's the that might be the one that Jason's referring to. And then 3 plays, 1 yard, where they, oh, this was the best part. This was the dumbest part of the game. This is where Georgia deserved to lose this game. At the end of the first half, it's 16-7. Auburn has gotten the ball back, but they have it deep in their own territory with like a minute to play. And Georgia's defense steps up. They stop Kerryon Johnson for no gain on first down, and then on second down, they stop him for 3. He only gets 3 yards. And then they call a timeout. The clock's at 42 seconds, but they have one more timeout remaining. Jarrett Stidham completes a very short, like, kind of bubble screeny pass to Darius Slayton. 1 yard. Georgia calls timeout again. There are 36 seconds on the clock. Auburn punts the ball, not very well, because Georgia returns the ball all the way to the Auburn 26. There are now 17 seconds left. Now, Georgia has, I believe, no timeouts left at this point. But they have the ball at the 26, down 9 points. Spencer Hall, what are you going to try to do at this point?
Well, let's see. I'm down 9.
Yep.
I got no timeouts.
No timeouts, but 17 seconds left to play. So you've got time to work with.
Yeah. You know what? I mean, I got a good quarterback, right?
Yep.
Got some receivers that can make things happen.
You got running backs that can catch the ball reasonably well.
Sure. You know what? We're going to put them in the pattern. We're going to throw a couple of, you know, we're just going to put it out there, see what happens, right?
Nope. No, you're not.
No?
Sony Michel took the ball to the left side of the line for 1 yard. They spiked the ball on 2nd and 9 with 4 seconds left. And then they missed a 42-yard field goal because they fucking deserved to. You had the ball at the 26 and you didn't even try? It was infuriating. Like, they had enough time where they don't even have to go end zone there. They can say, all right, we have two guys going to the end zone. We have two guys setting up intermediate routes. Worst case, we're completing a 9-yard pass. We're spiking the ball there. We're kicking the field goal. At least it's fucking closer! Sorry. Yeah. Sorry.
No, that's deserved. Georgia deserves this.
Yeah, they got it twice because, admittedly, I think that they were circumstantially somewhat screwed from the beginning, correct? But they ate it and abetted, you know? When you got the devil on your shoulder telling you everything wrong, don't go along with it. Don't help them out, because that's what Georgia did.
Well, everything you say is true. They still have, like, a good chance to make the playoff. It's not out of the question, so.
Absolutely.
So calm down, Georgia. You're fine.
Which is amazing, because Georgia can have a game where they did everything as badly as they possibly could, with maybe the exception of the passing game, right?
They only did almost as badly as they possibly could.
I mean, that was okay, right? It was, like, they're going to look at it and go, this is the part of the house that burned less than the rest of it, right?
This only has smoke damage.
Yeah, like, they can throw up this absolute, like, turd of a game. And they still might win the national title. They still might win the SEC. Football's amazing. Because they just coughed up a big one. They're like, oh, got that out of our system.
That thing's been rattling around in there for I don't know how long.
You know,
they just cast out a demon is what they did. Now we're putting it in Georgia Auburn terms.
It's true.
Plus, it's important to remember that even this late in the season, 1 week does not determine who you are or how good you are or how we should think of you. And I say this because, oh my God, Ohio State, what the shit?
If you'd asked me a week ago, who's the worst team in college football this week? I'd be like, oh, Ohio State, it's awful. If you asked me this week, who's the most ass-kicking tyrant of a team in college football? I'd be like, oh God, that's Ohio State. 100%. New week, new me.
It's like every fucking week is a different. Like if you go back to all the way to the playoff, like every single week, they're either they look like Ohio State or the other team looks like Ohio State, and you kind of don't know which way it's going to go.
It's good. It's like every 2 weeks you combine into a superhero movie. And Iowa, that's act one, where Batman gets his ass kicked and it's like, oh no, they broke my back and I got to somehow crawl out of this cave. And this was act two. Sorry, Michigan State. Jeez. These numbers are not fit for children, not fit for many adults. This featured one of the saddest field goals I've ever seen. When Michigan State kicked one at the end of the first half, down 35 points already. And yeah, those are the only points they scored. Great job, guys. You got outgained by over 300 yards.
Every comeback starts with a single point. All right. Or three.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's just that one didn't finish. It started.
Just still going.
Yeah, still going.
Still going.
They're going to pick it up in a year.
Watch this spring game. It's when they really roll it up. Vegas is smart, man. Vegas is really fucking good at this shit.
Vegas is smart because Vegas actually bothers to go back and look at the other games. And you're like, man, how did Michigan State get beat? So this is the same team that beat Minnesota by 3. All right? They beat Indiana by 8. I get that we were all excited that they beat Penn State, and that still meant a lot a week ago. But man, this team has been on the struggle bus a lot this season.
But that's the way it always is, though. Like every year we look up like, well, Ohio, the computers all adore Ohio State, and Michigan State, they got them ranked like 47th. And you can look and see, like, Michigan State recovers 100% of fumbles. That can't possibly sustain itself. You know, like, Michigan State is completely inflated, you know, bullshit that just somehow keeps... And I say this with all affection. It's my favorite FBS team. No one knows how or why it wins. It just keeps rolling. But the fiddler came home, or whatever the phrase is. You know, time to pay the cows. Time to pay the cows.
Well, like this is, I think the deeper you get into the season, right, the more you can see that there are, I don't really believe in momentum, but I do believe in timing and in situations that definitely benefit one team or another. Like, for instance, where did Michigan State like end up last week, right? They ended up where Jason and I put them, right? Which is in the veil of improbable success that Michigan State continues to be way better than they are, despite the numbers, right? Like, oh man, to hell with the numbers. The only number Michigan State cares about is W. W is not a number. Ask Mark D'Antonio.
It's two V's, all right? And that's a Roman numeral.
It's limited thinking like that. That keeps you from being a Michigan State
Spartan. It's 10, and that's the number of points we try to score in every game. W, you get it?
So, we thought, oh man, they're right exactly where we thought they should be, right? Meanwhile, Ohio State coughs up what is the most, like, the most goddamn improbable collapse of the year. Right? They give up 55 to Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
And you go, I don't know. So turning that corner, you're like, one. This is exactly when Michigan State should fall off, regress, and become exactly what people think they are. And two, They're facing a team that wanted nothing more than to dismantle someone.
Yeah, so this is works. Yeah, it's just, I mean, I don't know. This feels extremely Urban Meyer. Urban Meyer's teams just do not lose two games in a row. It doesn't matter if they look it doesn't matter if they look terrible the week before. But this was true at Florida, with the exception of 2007, which we all agree is the year that proves everyone is dumb and wrong. And it's been true at Ohio State. You go back and you know, 2015, they lose that Michigan State game. Everybody's upset because they didn't run the ball enough. Got Michigan next on the road. Number 10 Michigan at that point, 42-13. Just destroy him.
I don't know. Like, even the Urban Meyer revenge thing was flipped on its head here. Because, like, okay, Clemson 31, Ohio State 0. That set up an entire offseason of, oh, shit, Urban's going to have these fellas ready to roll. You know, like, they are going to be spitting fucking mad all this entire year. And then they get blown out at home by Oklahoma. And then after that, it was, oh, they're going to destroy everything in their path. And they did. And then they got destroyed by Iowa. So
listen, the Clemson thing meant that they destroyed Indiana. That's all. And they did.
And then they were satisfied. They have taken their fill.
It's one for one. It's legit. It's fair.
We have corrected the ledger.
We have fixed everything.
Yeah, I don't know that this ass beating doesn't make complete sense. And there's very few of those, right? Like, we've had some this year which have been completely baffling, right? Like, Cal just turning around and beating Wazoo 37-3 on a random Friday night. That'll happen, right? But this one checks out.
Now, you know, it doesn't.
If you take the names off the teams, take the logos off the helmets, yes, total sense. You know, it's the recent history in the series that's what will baffle me here. It's just not supposed to happen like this. Okay, why did it happen like this?
Are you more baffled by this result or Wake Forest scoring 64 points and getting 734 yards on Syracuse? I didn't pay attention to this game at all while it was happening. I couldn't have told, only because somebody tweeted at the Fullcast account, am I even aware that this is a real thing. But yeah, they threw for 363. They ran for 371. They scored 64 points, including 24 points in the fourth quarter. What? What are you doing, Wake Forest?
Settle down, Wake.
I know, man. Just chill. He's rumbling through the bar.
You're way too high, Wake Forest. You're way too high.
Never. I don't even believe in that concept. But damn, Wake, that's too high.
It's way too high. Let's do some ad reads, please.
From Van. Please read the following in Mac Brown's voice. I'm not going to read the following just yet. I'm going to get into Mac Brown character, which is pretty much just George W. Bush the way I do it.
And we will also note that Texas successfully avenged their most bitter rivalry loss of last year and beat the Kansas Jayhawks. Congratulations to Texas Hook'em.
Damn right. Took it down. And you know, speaking of avenging things, I'm supposed to say the following. And you'll all feel like you got some form of vengeance when you hear this joke. Because I got a joke to tell you. I'm not particularly good at these. But I'm going to try it. And I'm going to try to get through the whole thing without leaving early. Question. What is the difference between a chimera and an erection? The answer? I don't have a Camaro.
Ah!
Hook 'em.
Still got it.
I'll talk to you later.
Good one, Coach.
Jason?
So, this one relates to the biggest game we have yet to discuss. This is from Colin, and of course, these ad reads were part of our charity drive, Hurricane Disaster Relief. Colin would like, I guess, to answer this question. If Oklahoma wins the national championship, does that make their rookie head coach a Lincoln Continental? By one definition of the word continental, he would be the coach of the best college football team on the continent. Goes without saying. Canada's got college football. It's not very good. Mexico's got college football. It's got a long way to go. So, yes, by that definition. I think there are a few Lincoln models that would be a bit more apt for Lincoln Riley. This week, you could go with a Lincoln MKT, Mayfield killed TCU. You also got the Lincoln Sport, which was a Lincoln model that was discontinued about 50 years before Lincoln Riley's birth. Yes, he is 17 years old, head coach. It's very impressive. The Lincoln Mardi Gras, maybe go to the Sugar Bowl semifinal. The Lincoln Indianapolis, which, shit, you went to the Big Ten title game instead of the Big 12 title game. Better hurry back. They're going to put Kansas State in your spot, which means that shit's going to be over before you get there. There was a concept model, the Lincoln Machete, which, shit, that means you went to the St. Pete Bowl. You have to hack your way back out. You ain't going to make it. You just live in St. Pete now. The one that's most appropriate to the title game's city, which is Atlanta, it's Rhodes. It's confusing Rhodes. All have the same name. None of them are in, very few of them are in grids. They're all going in every angle you can imagine all at once, and they're all wall-to-wall with cars. The Lincoln Navigator. Lincoln, if you make it to our town, you're going to need some help getting to the stadium. And if you do win, hey, we got a Lincoln coronation for you. So you can tell the entire story of Oklahoma's season just based on Lincoln cars that either were made, weren't made, or were never meant to be made.
Okay, now I have to do my thing. So I am combining three different charity asks. These are all variously from Nick, Kevin, and Sanjay. They all wanted in some form the Brady Hoke voice. And I haven't really... I know Spencer and I did Brady Hoke getting arrested by Jeff Sessions probably like 6 weeks ago at this point. But I haven't... There hasn't been like a lot of occasion for Brady Hoke voice. But there is now. Because he's back on top. Which top is that, Spencer?
He's back on Rocky Top, y'all. He's gonna do it.
Oh,
go get that interim job.
Wish that I was on old Rocky Top down in the Tennessee hills. Ain't no smoggy smoke on Rocky Top. Ain't no telephone bills. Once I had a girl on Rocky Top, half bear, other half cat. Wild as a mink, but sweet as soda pop. I still dream about that. I do dream about soda. My doctor says it's perfectly healthy. I'm excited to be here in the University of Tennessee for the volunteers. Remember, volunteers, you love them, and that's why it's okay that you're not paying them. I do get paid, I think. It's not clear.
That was moving. That was really... You know, there's... I was about to just, like, get on your ass and remind you that there's multiple verses to Rocky Top.
No, yeah, that's not them all. No, no.
But that sounded too painful, so I appreciate you soldiering through.
Thank you. This... All right, again, because some people get their college football news from this podcast, God help them. Butch Jones has been fired as head coach of the Tennessee Vols.
Damn, we let him know like a week and a half early this time.
I know. We're pretty cool like that. This was not an unexpected move. But I think for weeks we were like, what the fuck is taking them so long? Like, there is no case to be made. There is no new information emerging. There didn't seem to be, like, a date they needed to hit for buyout reasons or anything like that. And then now it all makes sense. If they had fired Brady Hoke after the Georgia game, let me start over. If they had fired Butch Jones after the Georgia game and continued with the plan they were apparently on, where Brady Hoke becomes the interim coach, there is a chance, however small, that Brady Hoke can do enough in that limited run of schedule to make a compelling argument to be the full-time head coach in Knoxville. And they made the smartest choice that they could have, which is to say, we will not allow you enough time to finish this test, okay? We will not. We're not taking the chance that you're accidentally going to Christmas tree this and get a 15-20, and all of a sudden you're the dean. That's not happening.
It's like advertising the all you can eat, but then you're, hey, we're closing in 45 minutes.
But I was promised more shrimp.
I wanted to go back, Jason. You've missed one Lincoln that you could have used to talk about Lincoln Riley in Oklahoma and explaining their whole season. I would have said that lost taunting Des Moines would be the LTD, the Lincoln LTD.
Mm-hmm.
Or alternately, losing to Iowa State would be the Lincoln LTD because you lost to dirt. We're proud of that dirt in Iowa. Feeds America.
Were TCU and Oklahoma actually rooting for Iowa State to beat Oklahoma State? Or do they not care?
No, they wanted Oklahoma State to win that one.
Why? Yeah.
Because now the loser is still in line for the Big 12 title game. If Iowa State had won, Iowa State would hold the tiebreaker over TCU, and the Big 12 title game would very likely be Oklahoma-Iowa State.
No, I hear you. I just feel like Oklahoma should want that revenge opportunity.
No, just run away from that.
You don't want no Iowa State, brother. I'm saying the loser of that game is happy that Iowa State lost.
Sure. I get that.
The winner, however, would probably prefer to play face.
I was going to say, I think Oklahoma's best strategy is to not play them again, not because they would lose, because if you look, like, the stat sheet was, like, it was a fluke. It was a good fluke. Iowa State's had a great year, okay? But statistically, like, if that happens again, Oklahoma's going to win because they're a better football team on paper, not on dirt. On dirt, Iowa State's got that 1-0 in the year, baby. I think a rematch would actually have the unintended side effect of this. I think it would remind everybody that they had actually lost to Iowa State, right? Mm. They'd be like, they beat Iowa State by 40 points, but all the voters would be like, they lost to them?
Interesting. So they're 500 against Iowa State.
I and the rest of the committee felt that the reminder that Oklahoma lost to Iowa State was deeply concerning. We had completely forgotten about that until we saw the highlights during the Big 12 title.
I mean, to be fair, that happened at like a noon, right? We always talk about like the Pac-12 effect, but that happened at noon, meaning like, you know, there's like the brunch effect, right? Like, right. Like, oh, I don't know. I was eating some like delicious blueberry lemon ricotta pancakes.
Yeah. That's the 11 a.m. Central body clocks.
Yeah. I was just trying to get through some breakfast meats when that happened.
Now, we have assured that TCU is going to win the Big 12 championship game, right? Because that's the thing that fucks the Big 12 up the most, right?
Yeah, because I think this is the year when every conference does this, right? Like, every conference is going to have the most mathematically problematical champion imaginable. So, yeah, TCU wins the conference. Who's that going to be out of the Pac-12?
Stanford.
Stanford?
They need to not lose to Cal. They need Washington to beat Wazoo. But that's, like, none of this is impossible for Stanford.
Right.
For, like, a really, like, average, not that interesting Stanford team.
Yeah, exactly. Like, or this, that you get, like, USC Wazoo in the title game, and Wazoo somehow manages to pull out a complete horseshit win out of this, and that immediately invalidates the Pac-12. Like, they'll just be like, Wazoo? Oh, that didn't happen. That's a procedural error.
So, 11-2, Wazoo wins the Pac-12.
Mm-hmm.
TCU wins the Big 12 rematch. That sentence encapsulates like every Big 12 decision over the last decade, all culminating in, oh, shit. Like,
the worst possible outcome for the conference.
You let a bunch of like huge schools leave because you really liked this one super, super cool popular school, and then you had to do this realignment thing, and you had to bring in this troublemaker TCU, who, like, their entire brand is they just fuck up things for, like, bigger, you know, bigger programs. So now they're going to fuck up your entire conference, and they're going to do it via a conference title game that everyone advised you not to have. Like, Oklahoma is in line to clinch a playoff spot if it didn't have to play this game, as it did 2 years ago. Oklahoma, you beat, I think it's, what is it, Kansas in West Virginia, something like that. Mm-hmm. And they're in the playoff. They don't even need to go to the title game. They're good. They're going to be like number three on Tuesday. But anyway, so you have that, and then you have Wazoo and TCU as two lost conference champs. They're just going to put in like three Ohio States in the playoff.
You know who's still alive though in the Big Ten East? It's Michigan.
gonna do it, man.
It's technically true. Listen. They do have to beat undefeated Wisconsin on the road. Then they have to beat Ohio State. So they have a road to go.
You're like cheating up on what I was going for, which is this: the worst possible outcome for the Big Ten is for Michigan to do that, to face Wisconsin again, right? So we get multiple rematches in conference games and conference championships and makes them look absolutely ridiculous. And for Wisconsin to lose twice to Michigan, the eventual Big Ten champion with two losses, and Harbaugh just smiling atop this smoldering pile of wreckage.
Well, what's great is that it's already mid-November, and Michigan fans have not been thinking about the playoff. So their notes, their talking points, their stump speeches, they're not ready. So they're going to have to get all this shit together. Like, after that Wisconsin game, if they win, they're going to immediately have to pivot to, well, you know, if you look at Michigan's schedule, very strong out of conference. That was arguably the best Florida has been all season. Technically, that's true. You don't need to look into it any further. They'll just immediately have to start pivoting into aggressive arguing for why Michigan should get into the playoff. And you know what? If they can beat Ohio State and Wisconsin again, and everything else falls into place, I don't know that I have a terrible argument against it at this point. This is going to be an awesome year for the playoff committee. They are going to have to make so many tough decisions.
I mean, it kind of lines up. Like, if we can just agree the Pac-12 is out.
Oh yeah, no. Yes, there is
each of the other four power champs.
Yes, there is a clean route to all of it. Wisconsin wins out. Oklahoma wins out. Clemson or Miami at this point really doesn't matter. Which one?
You can do. You know, the Michigan, the TCU, the Miami loses to Pitt and beat Clemson. Like, you can do all that bullshit. Auburn, you know, let's just agree the Pac-12. You're just out. Okay, you're fine with that, right? You're probably not. It's just the way it is.
I'm fine with every conference being out and us having to scrap over a bunch of two-loss teams that we're trying to like sandwich in, right?
I guess a two-loss USC would probably have a kind of a case, because both their losses were like, well, we had a lot of injuries, you know.
Mm-hmm. I'm really just trying to find a way to get Alabama a title here, i.e., one loss, not in the championship game, and then they get to the playoff and win everything. I'm just looking out for you guys. That's all I'm about. Is protecting the Alabama football program, because I can't have you winning the conference, right? Nope. You're going to get in. You got to not win the conference and then get in the playoff.
Who's like the one seed that would, it might be Miami. Like, Miami's in really good shape to take the one seed. If they, you know, if they win out, that would include a win over Clemson and everything. If Bama comes rolling in as that four seed, an 11-1, you know, like lose to Auburn, but still get put in.
Oh, and then we've got.
So there is also, I want to add one other thing. There is a very non-zero chance at this point that Notre Dame will get to the end of the season and say that they played all four of the five Power Five conference champions. It's entirely possible. Miami, USC, Stanford, Georgia, Michigan State. All of those teams could win their conference at this point. And Notre Dame could get to the end of it and be like, motherfucker, are you going to ding us for this because we went 500 against that?
Yes. Yes. that's what's going to happen. Because this is the best part. Everyone's going to get to the end of the season and they're going to say, well, I don't know, we played a conference championship game. You can't fault us for that. That's why we have two losses. Right? That's why we got two. And Notre Dame's going to be like, we have two losses, but we played all these conference champions. And the voter will come back and go, well, I don't know, you guys didn't play a conference championship game.
Request denied.
Request denied.
play the best military academy, call it a conference championship game. Do it.
Hey, no.
Former conference with Army.
Just Army.
I don't know, man. Army might beat them.
That sounds like Buster Bluth. That's his conference. Notre Dame's going to Army.
Come play Army with us.